Pulse community. My name is Mike Carabin with FMA Pulse, and I'm here with Romeo Magigat, also with FMA Pulse, and we'd like to thank you for taking the time out to join us for this month's interview. We will be interviewing an FMA instructor every month so you, the FMA Pulse community, can get to know these instructors more on a deeper level. This month we will be speaking with Guru Fred Everard all the way from Singapore and discuss his background in Filipino martial arts and his system Kali Majapahit. Thank you very much for taking time out to speak with us. I know you have a very busy schedule.
Yeah, no problem. I always try to make some time for helping developing the Filipino martial arts, and you guys are doing a great job with your forum. I really like it, and it's part of the game. It's definitely part of the game. No problem.
Excellent. Thank you. It's still in the beginning stages, but we really hope that it's going to grow very quickly.
Yeah, it has a lot of potential. I've seen many FMA forums starting, but very few being as professional as the one you have. So definitely it's going to grow.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Guru Fred. I really do appreciate that.
I guess we could just start out with if you wouldn't mind telling us about yourself and how you got involved in the martial arts and especially the Filipino martial arts.
Yeah. So basically I was born in a martial artist family, so it was a little bit easier for me maybe. I started martial arts in 1978 or 79. I'm not sure. I was 6 or 7 years old at the time.
Oh, that's
early. My mother was involved in judo, and my father was involved in judo and boxing. So it was maybe a little bit easier for me. They were only doing it as a hobby, but automatically my mom put me in judo, and I went through judo, taekwondo, karate, several styles of kung fu when I was young. So it was... It was maybe destiny, I don't know.
That's what you were meant to do.
So that's for the martial arts in general. And then in 1994, I went in the army. I was a paratrooper, so parachuting, I hurt my knee. And at this time, the doctors told me that pretty much martial arts were over for me, especially I was doing a lot of wushu, jumping around. And I've decided find a martial art that was a little bit more grounded. I had a little bit of experience in Wing Chun, so I was trying to find a Wing Chun school, a good Wing Chun school in Paris. And one day I met this guy in a gym. I was in a gym with a friend of mine, and I met this guy who was doing what I thought was Kung Fu, was Wing Chun. So I look at the guy, he's training in a little room, and he's doing some Wing Chun. So I'm not sure. I go talk to him, and he tell me, no, I'm not doing Wing Chun. This is a cadena de mano. It's a Filipino martial arts, Kali. So I've never heard of Filipino martial arts before, but I look at the guy, and he moves like, wow, this flow is amazing. So the same night, I was on my way to his class, and I saw my first Kali class. I just loved it. I signed up immediately, and he was Jeff Espinous, Punong Guru Jeff Espinous, and I've been training with him ever since.
So Guru Fred, what was it about the Philippine martial arts that attracted you so much? Because since you've been studying other forms of martial arts since you were a kid, what was it about the Philippine martial arts that really attracted you?
First of all, it was that flow. Always flowing, never stopping, no hard movement like karate or taekwondo, very, very fluid. That was the first thing. The second thing is the how vast it was. For me, in my head at the time, I was maybe 15, 20 years old. In my head, if you want to kick, you do taekwondo. If you want to punch, you do boxing. If you want to wrestle, you do jiu-jitsu or Brazilian jiu-jitsu. But when I met Punong Guru Jeff Espinous, it seems like he can do it all. And I was amazed how vast the Filipino martial arts were, with the self-defense part of cadena de mano, with the dagger part, the baston, double baston, with the dumog, the panantukan, pananjakman, sikaran. I was completely amazed by the fact that everything was there. So that's why he hooked up.
And your system, Kali Majapahit, that incorporates all of the sub-styles, I don't know if I want to call it sub-styles, of FMA.
Subsystems, we can say.
Subsystems, and your system does incorporate all of that.
I'm not sure. That's what I'm trying to do anyway. But it does have many subsystems. We mostly I was influenced by Jeff Espinous' Kali Sikaran, and the fact that his Kali Sikaran is already very complete. So he's my main influence. And even today, when I talk to my students or when I give seminars, I tell everybody he's my main influence, definitely, with Suro Mike and I. And the reason why the reason why I try to expand my knowledge in the Filipino martial arts and to bring all the subsystems together, it's because I believe they are all logically connected. And I don't judge any other schools, of course, but I believe it's a mistake to teach them separately, since the logic between them allows them to be learned so much faster than if you want to take a boxing class, then a taekwondo class, then a jiu-jitsu class. So the logic and the links between all of those subsystems is, for me, the main core of our teaching. And like I was saying, Kalimantcha Pahit is not a new style of Filipino martial arts. I don't have this pretension. And there's many people much better than me and probably much older than me who has done terrific jobs doing some styles. But I like to think Kalimantcha Pahit is a system of teaching. And the way I teach it may be the difference with other Filipino martial arts.
And sure. And what would that difference be?
Well, it's very hard to explain like this on an interview. We use what I
call
a rotating curriculum. So most martial arts system in the world use a linear curriculum. It's you go from phase one to phase two, or from rank one to rank two to rank three. If you jump into the class, if a student join the school in the middle of the year, in June, for example, he's gonna have to go to a phase one curriculum. He's gonna have to wait until he can really jump into the class. With a rotating curriculum, the way I teach it, anybody can jump into the class at any point of time. We have different blocks of material, and every block is a rank, but it doesn't matter at what point of time you jump into the school. You can join a block and everybody in the school is a beginner in this block. For example, block A, B, C, D, if you arrive in the school when people are learning block A, at the end of block A, you get your first rank. But if you arrive in the school when they are learning block C, at the end of block C, you have your first rank. It doesn't matter at which period of time you join. Every block of material equal a new rank. And this is, for me, the logic behind the rotating curriculum. I don't know if it's going to make any sense on paper, but yeah, I guess people have to try it.
Sure.
No, it makes complete sense, Guru Fred. It gives the opportunity for a student to really absorb the material and not feel left behind.
Yeah.
And then it gives the opportunity, I guess, for students to have that camaraderie with one another, to help each other grow in the system and learn the art at the same time.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely, it is a different style of teaching, but it's definitely something that is needed, especially when you're covering so much material.
Yeah, definitely. And to answer your first question, the subsystem that we teach right at the beginning in our school are the double stick, the single stick, so sinorali, solo baston, dagger, cadena de mano, panantukan, the boxing part, sikaran, the kicking part, dumog, largomano, spada y daga, sibat banka with the long staff and the spear, trancada, which is the joint lock, silat, sarong, krambit. So there's many, many things right at the beginning for the student to learn. It may seem like a lot to a beginner, but once you've seen the class, once you've seen the logic between all those concepts, it's actually very easy to learn. It's very logical, because there's maybe five main concepts to remember for a beginner. And after that, this is just the weapon you have in your hands that change. The distance maybe, but the concept is the same.
Gufred, do you find that, the students that join your school, do most of them already have a background in some other form of martial arts, or
it's 50-50. Say that
for the ones that do have a background in martial arts, how do they adapt? Is it pretty easy for them to adapt, or do they have to change a lot of the habits that they've learned from the other disciplines?
Yes, definitely. It's harder. If somebody has a martial art background that does not include Southeast Asian systems like Silat, Kali, Eskrima, Muay Thai, Southeast Asian martial arts, then it's harder for them than for a beginner, definitely, because they have to unlearn first, or at least to put on the side until they understand the way we do our basics. Only after maybe one year and a half, then what they've learned before will be included in their Kali and they will grow even more and use this background as an asset instead of as an inconvenience. But at the beginning, people who are blank in the martial arts world, it's easier for them to start from scratch. Now, people who have Silat or Kali or Eskrima or Arnis or even Muay Thai background, of course, it's much easier. When you go to the Panantukan class, if you have done Muay Thai for 10 years, it's much easier. When you go to the Solo Baston class, if you have done Arnis for many years, it's easier, and so on and so on. Tell me if I talk too much. I have a tendency to get very excited when we talk about Kali.
No, that's great. That's great, and we're glad you're excited about it. Regarding your name, the Kali Majapahit, how did you come up with that? Because I'm sure that some people don't realize that the Philippines was actually part of the Majapahit Empire.
Yes, definitely. A big part of the Philippines, the Visayas and Mindanao Islands, were part of the Majapahit Empire. Well, I came out with the name because I just looked at my system. I just looked at my background in this families of martial arts, and it was for me logical. First, I tried to get information about Filipino martial arts from the three main parts of the Philippines, from the north, mm-hmm. from the center, and from the south. The Kali that I learned from Jeff Espinous has a big Inocento influence, a big Kali southern influence and Silat influence, but mm-hmm. The one I learned with Suro Makinai was also, Suro's family was from the north, so of course it has an influence from the north, especially with the Largo Mano. And of course we have a big different, big influences from different systems. So first, it was trying to bring together without hurting the cultural part of it, to bring together the three main geographic part of the Filipino martial arts when I was a student. The second mm-hmm. thing is I have a big Muay Thai and Penchak Silat background, so it was for me just logical to embrace everything from this period of time. And plus, I really love the culture of the Majapahit Empire. When you learn about it, when you go to places like Ubud, for example, in Indonesia, you just look at what they let us. And you can only be amazed by the richness and the quality of the culture. When you look at a Javanese kris from the Majapahit Empire, it's just amazing. So that's because of those influences and cultural aspects that I use the term Kali Majapahit.
Girlfriend, Kali Majapahit is currently taught in the Philippines. In fact, you presented your system to the Fulcrum Council of Martial Arts Masters in Baguio,
yes.
and the National Council of Kali Eskrima Arnis Masters in Manila.
Yeah.
What was your experience? How did those organizations respond to your system?
It was an experience for me. First, they respond very well. I had a very very good respond, a very good feeling. And it was amazing meeting all those masters and people who are part of the history of modern FMA. When I went for the first time in Baguio, my friend and student over there, Mike Bugnos, then took me to all the mecca places of FMA in the north, and some places where almost 100 years ago those masters were meeting in secret, and you know, it was just magical. And to go back to the Council of Masters in the north and in Manila, I had the opportunity first to give a demo. It was not a seminar at the time. It was just me showing what I'm doing in front of the Council of Masters in Baguio. There were maybe 15 martial arts masters over there, some Arnis, of course, and many masters from other martial arts, all of them Filipinos. Filipino persons, but very few of them doing Filipino martial arts. We had a 6th Dan Aikido Jiu-Jitsu, 7th Dan Aikido Gai, 5th Dan Judo. We had some mm-hmm. Muay Thai coach, Wushu coach. And most of them, strangely enough, haven't heard about Filipino martial arts. It's like another world. I mean, you arrive in the Philippines and you expect... It's like you arrive in China and you want to see some kung fu schools, you want to see Shaolin. Well, it's the same. You arrive in the Philippines and as a foreigner, you expect to see a Kali school every corner. But mm-hmm. even though there are still many Cali schools in the center. There's many Cali schools in Manila, in Cebu, and probably in the south. I haven't been in the south yet. But in the north, I won't go that far to say that it's a lost art or dying art, but it became very, very small, and or it's hidden and I haven't seen it yet, or, mm-hmm. or not many people do it. To understand that, you also have to understand the colonial mentality of the Philippines.
Exactly. Philippines. Exactly.
And I was amazed when I was there to talk with young and other Filipinos telling me that pretty much, I make it simpler, of course, but pretty much they were telling me that everything from the Philippines cannot be good.
They have exactly.
They have to turn to the U.S. They have to turn to Europe to find something, something exciting, something of quality, something that thrills them. And sure. I was scared when I heard that.
Yeah, it seems that the Filipino martial arts in the Philippines is considered almost like a second rate or not as hip for some reason.
Yes, yes. For especially in Luzon. And that's, like I said, it's very scary. Many, many people practicing martial arts in the Philippines turn to Taekwondo or Aikido. It's the two big, and Muay Thai, MMA are coming back those days. But few years ago, it was really Taekwondo and Aikido were very big. And sure. To go back to Baguio, I gave my first demo over there. And with all these martial artists, all of them 10, 15, 20, 30 years older than me, of age and of experience. So I couldn't make any mistakes. So I was trying to show how vast their culture was, how vast their martial art was. And I went through every few things that I know. I went through the sticks, the knife, of course, every time right-handed, left-handed, to try to show them that ambidextrous is also part of sure. MMA. I went to the ground. I went on the ground, doing some wrestling. I show some counters to basic Aikido, Jiu-Jitsu locks. And I think they were amazed, not by me, but by the art of the Philippines that they didn't know. And at the end of the demo, there was a round of applause. Everybody smiled, and I was feeling very happy with what I've done. But most important, one of the master, I think he was the president of the association over there in Luzon, or the secretary or something like this. Somebody from the board took the mic. He was the Muay Thai coach. So yes, one of the master took the mic and said in front of everybody, quote, "I'm ashamed to be Filipino and not knowing what you know." And again, it's not. I don't see it as it's me, Fred, as a person that was impressing. I've seen many, many Filipino martial artists much better than me in my life. But I think I was at the good place at the right time, and they were ready. They were ready to not to forget what they've done before, but to switch to something more local, something more connected with their roots. And this is how things start. From there, everything starts. They had me came back in the Philippines the year after to give a seminar. After we opened a group over there, after they introduced me to the Council of Masters in Manila, and I met all these wonderful masters from everywhere, from Maranonis, from Dolce Pares, from Pictitircia, all those great people, and everybody welcomed me. I just correct something, because I've seen a fake interview of me on the internet, and I wasn't aware of it, where somebody said that I bring back the FMA in the Philippines, and definitely not. There's many, many schools in the Philippines. I didn't bring back anything. I just show them how rich their martial arts is, and maybe because I'm a Caucasian, maybe because I'm European, they were interested to listen to what I have to say about their own culture.
Sure.
So that's the main difference. I'm not a better practitioner than anyone. I didn't bring back anything. The only thing is my voice may sound different to them. That's why they listen to it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I think we really need to thank you for sharing that experience. And it's unfortunate that the Philippines has had a long history of colonization, but yet also a long history of resistance to colonization. And I know, me personally, coming from the north, my family comes from Cagayan Valley.
Yeah.
It has been, you can't find a Kali Eskrima school anywhere around there, at least in, you know, my hometown. And it's been kind of considered a little bit, for lack, as they say in the Philippines, badoy or unfashionable.
Yes, yes.
Out. And out. Maybe, you know, in the North, there are things there. There are schools there that are still, or art forms are still handed from family to family or not taught openly. But those are things that are yet to be found.
Yes.
And hopefully those things can really, that rich history can come out before it's lost.
Yes, yes, you're very right.
Do you find, Guru Fred, that there is a reemergence, though, of Filipino martial arts in the Philippines?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Many organizations are doing a great job trying to promote the Filipino martial arts. Maybe at a period of time, it was a little bit too focused on the sports aspect of harness, and which is good, because if sports harness was not here some 10, 20, 30 years ago, maybe 50, I'm not sure about the date, probably FMA would have disappeared from the Philippines.
Really?
So I'm very thankful to the sports aspect of harness, even if it's not what I practice, it's not what I teach, but it's a very important part. Now,
sure, it has its place.
Yeah, it has its place, definitely. But now it may be a little bit time to go back to something more traditional, because when people want to do sports and want to have fun after school or even at school, in some school it's still taught, they go to sports harness. But when they want to learn traditional martial arts, they go to Japanese styles. So maybe it's time to tell the Filipinos that their local martial arts has a big traditional part, and it's very, like I said 10 times before, it's vast, it's huge, and there's many things to explore and to learn from.
Sure, and considering how practical and effective the FMAs are, you would think that, you know.
Yes, definitely. That's something very surprising, because the Filipinos are not an aggressive people. They are a lovely people and always smiling. You are always welcome anywhere you go, but you can feel the warrior spirit. I mean, you're in disco, there's a fight, everybody gets a knife. So So you would think that they would go to an art that will give them a chance to fight on a real street fight after a few months, and not to a martial art that gives them that chance after a few years. It's just the colonial mentality. After World War II, especially, they have a big Japanese influence, and they stick to it. I don't know why. I was also surprised, back to the Baguio story, that at some part in my seminar, I did a live blade demonstration with antique Filipino weapon that I bring with me, and that some collectors and museum have lent us.
Yes.
And nobody knew how to use them in the crowd. None of the master, even the guys, no one. So when I showed, and some of them had some antique weapons in their family. One of them, a Muslim imam, had a kris. One of the master had a kampilan, but they had no idea how to use it. It was just hanging here on the wall. And I gave a small class. They just loved it, and they were amazed. But it was very shocking for me that they had these family treasures, and the art of using it was not passed on.
I want to go back to the weapons, or the traditional Filipino weapons, Guru Fred.
Okay.
This is something I've always been wondering, is in terms of like bladed weapons like swords, the katana always seems to, you know, stick out in people's minds. I've never actually seen a kampilan, you know, in real life.
Yeah.
But how... in terms of craftsmanship, how would you rate the Filipino blades? Not that I'm doing a katana versus Filipino blade or anything like that, but you know, for the listeners that have never actually seen live Filipino blades or anything like that, how would you rate the craftsmanship for that?
It's a difficult question, because there are many, many different types of weapons for the same family of weapons. What I mean is, if you are a warrior or if you are a prince, the weapon will be completely different.
Sure.
In Japan, there are also differences, but the standard pretty much, not is not the same, but pretty much stays very high for anyone. In the Philippines, you had some warriors who took any piece of metal they could find, just fire it and do it into a sword design and go fight with it. So you can find really, from a collector point of view, you can find in the Philippines the best and the worst. If you want to compare the quality of swordmanship or craftsmanship, you can compare a Javanese kris with a Japanese katana, definitely. But the Javanese kris, the way they bend the metal is very...
So it's folded also.
And it's very, very high quality swordmanship. In the Philippines, you can find really high quality krises. You can find krises with an amazing pamor. You can find krises or barong with very, very high quality metal work. But it's more practical weapons that decoration. In Indonesia, it's simpler to describe the weapon. Especially during the Majapahit Empire, Java was the capital. It was the art capital also. So Javanese just look amazing. The quality is just wonderful. But some of them are not made for war. Now, if you look at the Bugis kris or different places in Indonesia and Malaysia, you can find krises not the same quality as a collectible object, but definitely made for war. In the Philippines, you don't really have this regional differences. You can find a very, very good kris, and you can find a kris made out of a car spring, for example. So it's a hard question, but there are some very high quality weapons in the Philippines. It's more rare with the Kampilan. The Kampilan was really a fighting object, nothing special, but the kris was also a ceremonial and spiritual object, just like in India. So you can find some really high quality krises, definitely. Does that answer the question?
I was just curious. I've always been curious about that. And when we do go back to the Philippines in October, I hope to be able to see some in person.
Yeah. Hopefully. You have to. It's very hard to arrive in the Philippines and to find good quality weapon just like that. First, many of the high value collectors are not in the Philippines anymore. I know, for example, Singapore. I have pretty nice collections. I know many people who have amazing Filipino blades. It's harder to find in the Philippines. Not that I'm not here, but it's harder to find. I know there is a war museum somewhere up north from Baguio, a military museum, and I've seen an amazing barong over there and a very beautiful kris. But my advice to you, just for your trip, is try to find connections before. I'm gonna try to help you on that, depending on where you go. But don't expect to arrive to get out of the plane and to find someplace. You have to get ready for it.
Gufred, speaking of the military, you also train the special forces in the Philippines as well as the Philippine National Police.
Yes.
How are you able to? Given the privilege and the honor to do that, I'm sure that your name kind of flew across the Philippines. Oh, we need to get that guy to teach us. But I'm sure you can share us on how that came about and your experience with that.
I don't know if my name is famous in the Philippines yet. What I know is that...
famous enough to be the instructor of the Special Forces in the Philippine National Police.
What I know is that... First, when I started teaching in the Philippines, many people were concerned. Who is this white, too young to be a master kind of guy? I don't know where is the story now. For the special forces, it was, like I said, my first presentation of Kali Majapahit in Baguio was being at the right place at the right time, and everything flowed from there. So this first demo, there was a military captain, I believe, that was here, and plus, of course, all the high-ranking masters of Luzon. The second time I came, it was a seminar. The captain came back again, and then my name maybe starts to make its way to the trainers of the special forces and the policemen. And the last seminar I did last year, two officers from the police and the special forces were here, two of the training officers, one captain and one major. And those guys just loved the seminar and they booked me for a military training. And that's how it goes. that's how it went. And I will be back there in October to teach all the soldiers in the military base over there in the north.
And we hope to see you then, if we can get the chance and the opportunity to meet you in person.
Yeah, that would be great. You'll be very welcome. So to finish your question, how is it to teach them? First, it's amazing because it's an experienced crowd. They are very, very focused and they listen very well on what you have to say because it's important to them. My first job was to correct few mistakes, that was a few technical mistakes, but I didn't have a lot to do. It's not like you teach beginners. What I did was pretty much based on empty hands and knife, of course. And this August, I will go back to the training there, and I will teach them things that are definitely not for the public. It's a killing art when you go to the military's teaching.
I would like to read a quote that I read from your website that I was really moved by it. It's actually from one of the captains from, I believe it's the Philippine National Police. The quote reads, "It's a shame that we haven't learned such art form from our forefathers. It took a foreigner like you to make us realize how beautiful the Filipino martial art is and how valuable it is in our history. It's an honor to be your student. I'm looking forward to for you to train our policemen this October in Calimachpahit." I just really found that to be very, very powerful in that, you know, like we're talking about the colonial mentality, it's like even Filipinos in the Philippines don't even know their own history, is, you know, with the Filipino martial arts or with a lot of things. With the colonial mentality, I mean, there's so many things that... like, what's a couple examples, Romeo, like, with the colonial mentality, aside from Filipino martial arts?
Well, there's a lot of colonial mentality around products, and, you know, where Filipinos, they may call toothpaste Colgate, and
yes.
If you look like soda pop, or soft drinks, for example, they'll call any soft drink Coca-Cola, mm-hmm. or Coke. And it's very prevalent that we've been... I don't know how to encapsulate it in words, where a lot of our history and a lot of our very good things that makes us as a people have been either destroyed, hidden from us, or distorted in such a way to benefit colonial masters. And as we've looked in our history, or at least from what we've known and what we have learned, Mike and myself, that Eskrima has been hidden in many ways, and hidden in dance, or hidden in such a way that we can't show these things to the authorities because it's been banned by the Spaniards, or it's been barred by the United States, or, you know, even Japanese influences. So again, just touching back at reading this quote, and I've read this, and it's a very touching thing. It touched my heart reading it, because what it is that it really shows that you're not really teaching anything new, and you said it already in this interview, but you're helping raise awareness around something. And yeah. sometimes it takes no disrespect, Guru, sometimes it takes a foreigner to do that.
Yeah, definitely. I think what touches them the most is I don't only love the Filipino martial arts, I love the Filipino culture. And I've been in love with the Philippines and its culture for many, many years now. But when I teach them at the end of the class, at the end of every of my seminars, I always tell them, It's your entire culture that you have to look at. It's not only, oh yeah, shit, we have a very good martial arts, let's do it. No, it's everything. For me as a foreigner, I'm French. I was born in Paris. So if you take something like food, for example, it's really what we're all about. But for me, what a best night, that adobo contest night. We do that at my school.
I do make a mean adobo myself.
We do adobo contest night at the school all the time. All my Filipino mm-hmm. students, and even the non-Filipinos, they cook an adobo chicken, and we just put everything together with a little bit of rice. My wife's make a buko pie at the end, and what better night? I mean, it's just great food. Sure. It's just a lot of fun. And it's not only that, it's everything. The music, the dances, and everything is just something that they don't want to forget. And they are amazed that they can interest us. That's the biggest question that I have when I go there. It's not, oh, you're so good in martial arts. Oh, you do this, you do that. Oh, you went around the world. No, the main questions that I have when I go there, it's why? Why are you interested in us? There's nothing here. And my goal, the goal of my seminars is not teaching them how to be better knife killers. The goal of my seminars is telling them, yes, there's many things that interest people. And there's many foreigners, white, yellow, black, whatever kind of people that are interested in what you have to offer. So sure. Please take a look at it and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. You've also spent time with the Igorot tribes in the Philippines, and you've done research there. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I'm still in the middle of my search, and mostly my students over there. Mike is a Igorot, of course, but he's also an expert in the culture over there. He wrote a very interesting book already on the Philippine Cordillera. And he's really the expert. He meets with the old tribes. He knows everything about the different sarong they use, the different weapons they use, all the headhunters, stories and everything. So I'm not the expert to talk about it. But what I can tell you is that they definitely have a warrior culture that is very much alive. But for some reason, it didn't reach the cities. For some reason, you have to walk 3 hours in the jungle or in the forest to find those people. And they don't really have a martial arts the way we see it. But when you look at the traditional dances, some of the dances look very, very much like the salutation we do at the beginning of some Kali or Eskrima classes.
Really?
Very similar. I was really amazed that some of the salute that is used by all the Inocentos generation, Inocento, Calisicara, and all those guys, look very similar. I don't know exactly from which teacher he learned it, but it's very similar. Some of the moves are very similar to what you see in Nayan Eskrima. So,
really?
Yeah, I was very, very hypnotized by the local dances. And it's still something I have to go deeper in.
Guru Fred, speaking of the Nine system, you also trade with Mike and I. You spent time at his house and trained. What was that like, training with him?
It was amazing. I met Zero Mike through Jeff Espinosa. And I went with Jeff to San Jose, California, to train with Zero Mike in 1996 for the first time. That's where I met him. It was an experience. Zero Mike was a big Filipino first. He was tall, he was large, and he was impressive. But he moved like a lightweight. He moved like somebody who is 10 inches smaller and 10 kilos lighter. He moved fast. He was very, very hypnotizing when he moved with a stick, especially in Sarada, which was really the core system of Inayan. I remember mostly how he was as a human being. He was a great teacher and he was a great practitioner, definitely, no doubt. But he was so fun. Inside the class, he was thorough. And it was almost military. You have to be into this martial arts philosophy when you were in class with him. No doubt. But outside,
very stern.
Outside he was just Mike, and it was so fun to be around. I have many, many stories with him, and I'm sure Jeff have even more. It was great. It was great when we were outside. Sometimes Suru wants to go for a hamburger. It's 11 at night, and shit, where? Oh, let's take the crew. I want my hamburger. Many, many cool stories. One of the funny parts was the training outside of the school. When I was there, I was living in his house. I was sleeping on his garage. He has a garage who was built to receive a martial arts practitioner from other country. There were a big bed, many, many Filipino martial arts books, and it's very comfortable, very cozy. And I was there, and anytime during the day or even at night, Suro could come, or John Ward or Emmanuel Hart, and they will try to surprise you, drawing your knife, drawing your Spyderco knife as you can, or attacking you with a stick, and you have to defend. It was really an FMA house, definitely. It was
sure.
It was great.
That reminds me of the Pink Panther.
Say that again.
That reminds me of the Pink Panther when Professor Clouseau would come home and Kato would jump out anywhere and just attack him.
Exactly the same. What I remember very clearly also from this period was the house of Suromaki Kinai. His house was just a Filipino martial art museum. You could see some amazing creases hanging on the wall, some barongs. He had few campilans under his pillow.
There must be a big pillow.
Yeah, and all these pictures, old pictures from Angel Cabales, from Max Almento, many with Danny Nocento, many modern history Filipino kind of pictures everywhere in the house. It was amazing.
So Guru Fred, we'd also like to ask you about your experiences with Hilot.
Do you actively practice Hilot?
Yes.
Or teach it?
Yes.
So that's almost like a balance, because obviously you know the martial aspect of it, and then you also have the healing aspect of it.
Yes. So it's, for me, it's very important to have both. It was very important to decide very early in my professional career to decide why I want to teach martial arts. I believe every instructor should ask himself this question. Why do we do that? What is the purpose? What is martial arts is a tool, but for what? Depending on where you live, the answer will be different. If you live in a city where there's a lot of danger, where you know that every time you take the train, you have a risk to be attacked, well, definitely you will probably teach first for self-defense. If you live in a country where, I don't know, everybody's sick, there's a lot of health problem, well, maybe you use it for another reason. My goal was to try to put everything together, to have a very efficient and applicable martial arts system that can be used for self-defense easily. To have also a part that will take care of the health of the students and the instructors as well, and a part of personal development, a part where the more you practice, the better of a person you are. And I truly believe that as a martial artist, and it's unfortunately not always the truth, as a martial artist, the more we practice, the better our health should be. We should not practice 10 years and have low back problem. We should not practice 20 years and have knee problem. That should not exist today with what we know of the human body, what we know with dietetic, when we know of sports methodology and so on and so on. This should not happen. And too many times people do 10, 20 years of something, of judo or whatever, and they have to stop because the body is just destroyed.
Sure.
For me, it should be the opposite. The more you practice, the more your body and your spirit should show a difference with people who don't practice. And that's my core idea when I start teaching. I have to build people as persons. I have to build their confidence and everything that we talk about in the martial arts. But I have also to build the health. I have to build their health consciousness. And I have to build their skills as well.
Sure. So, for example, how do you implement that, the health aspect of it?
Okay. First, we have, after every single class, not every single class, but almost all the classes, we have 30 minutes of Hilot. So I use the word Hilot a little bit. Maybe it's not always correct because I use it for many things. But for me, it's as soon as it's health-oriented, even if it's not pure Hilot massage, I call it Hilot to make it simpler for my students. Okay, it's just a question of semantic. So we have 30 minutes of Hilot class after every Kali class. It can be me showing few massage movements and the students do it on each other. It can be me doing some self-massage on my legs and on my feet and people.
I was just going to ask, is that something that you could also apply to yourself?
Yeah, definitely. But it can be something completely different. We have also some typical Filipino self-massage move with the stick, for example, something very useful that every FMA practitioner should do. You put one stick on the floor and barefoot, you step on it. That will be a great reflexology. It's free and it's just amazing. It works very, very well. And that's typical Filipino. So a few things like this that I use for my students after class. We do also some breathing exercise, posture corrections. That's what we do in this 20, 30 minutes kind of classes. But apart from that, I also have a full training, something that I do in 2 months for the students who want to join. And 2 months where I teach them basic Filipino massage routine. When this is done, we go to osteopathy and chiropractic. When this is done, we go to posture correction. And when this is done, we go to dietetic and nutrition.
Oh, that's great.
Have a complete
vision. That's like a very, that's almost a system within itself of, it's a great balance or counterbalance to the actual, the martial art aspect of it. And it sounds very complete. I never stopped to think about using the actual baton as a way to do the your own reflexology. That is just amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, it was logical because I learned massage and osteopathy from many, many people. Most of them were Asian, Filipinos or Chinese, but I also have an osteopathy instructor in France. And after seeing all those systems and using it for many, many years on my patients and on my students, I've realized, okay, how to make it look more Filipino? Not that I want to transform something. not that I want to transform something into Filipino, that something that is not. But I'm sure if you're a Filipino warrior, you're in the jungle, you have your kamagong stick in your hand, and you've hurt somewhere. You have pain somewhere in your body. I'm sure those guys used to find solution with what they have, and that's why I tried.
Sure.
So I'm not trying to say, look, I'm in Chinese medicine and I call it Hilot because cooler. No, I'm just trying to think like a Filipino in the jungle with a stick. What would they do? And I've realized that with the puño, you can give yourself great massage. With the stick itself, you can do many, many things. And the reflexology works just amazing. It's one of the deepest reflexology sessions you can have, and it's completely free. You just put your stick on the floor, and you walk on it for 10 minutes. The first time my student do it, it's like, it's terrible pain. It's really, really a lot of pain for most of them. And what I told you, it's not the stick that is painful. It's not the massage. It's not the process that is painful. It's painful because you're not clean inside. It's painful because you have a lot of toxins. It's painful because organs are tensed, but it's not supposed to be. And after a few classes, few weeks, few months, it becomes much easier for them to do it. And after a little bit, they realize, wow, that was great massage, and I feel much better now. So that's how we really turn any kind of natural healing knowledge into something typical, not Filipino, but something that has a Filipino flavor. If you see what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure the diet also plays a big part of it too.
Yes, definitely, definitely.
So, Guru Fred, we ask all of the FMA instructors that we interview, what is your current view of the Filipino martial arts and, or, you know, the state of the Filipino martial arts? What is your views on that, the current state?
Well, I'm always amazed by the level of the person I meet. When I go to, I was in Europe few weeks ago. I was in Paris, and I went to a seminar that Punong Guru Jeff Espinus did in Germany, and there were people from everywhere, mostly Europeans and Americans, and I was amazed of the level. The skills, it's very high. The level in Europe is growing dramatically. The level in the United States is growing dramatically, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful to see that nowadays the standard in Filipino martial arts is very high, and all this because of people who did an amazing job. And we have to think not only our forefathers, but people who are just one or two generations before us. If Danny Nocento wouldn't have done this amazing synthetic job, today Filipino martial arts wouldn't be the same. If Jeff Espinus wouldn't have done this work, if Bobby Breen would have done this work, and all those people, just people who are one or two generations from us, we couldn't know all that we know. I mean, why do I have so many subsystems in Kalima Japahit? Why was I able with the same teacher to learn boxing, kickboxing, throwing, wrestling, sticks, double sticks, knife, self-defense, long distance, short distance, medium? Why? It's because of people like Dan, because of people like Jeff, people like Mike and I. And they did a tremendous job. Those generations were really the savior of Filipino martial arts. And today, why the standard is so high? It's because of those guys. It's the gift that they have given us. And we have to use it.
Yeah, I agree.
That Yeah, that's absolutely true. Well, we covered a lot today, and you know, Guru Fred, it's just wonderful talking to you. I really, really wish we can spend a lot more time and really dig into details. I would love to just sit over dinner somehow and talk to you some more. But just to wrap things up, we just want to know if there is anything you'd like to share with FMA Pulse or everybody else.
Well, like you said, we covered a lot already. Let me try to think about something. Mostly, the thing I try to teach to my students, the thing I try to teach through my seminars is martial arts and health are related. They are cousins. Mm-hmm. And it's always a great idea. Even some instructors are not healers, even some instructors are not doctors. It doesn't matter. The way you carry yourself, the way you live your life, your students look at it as a referral. You can be a great martial arts instructor if you go to McDonald's every time after class, students look. This will become a standard for them. So I'm not asking everybody to live like a monk, but it's very important, I believe.
Be conscious.
Yeah, for any martial arts instructor to be not only conscious for themselves, but to realize that the students are looking, the students are watching. And it's very important to always keep that in mind. Very often, my students who live in Singapore for a few years and train with me and go back to Europe, they ask me how to find a good martial art class. Give me a tip. And I say, well, just observe the martial art instructor after class. Observe how he handles himself. Observe his posture when he's not teaching, what he eats, what he does. Does he get angry very easily, or is it a calm temper? And all this for me as a reflection. Are a reflection of what a good martial arts should be, not only Filipino, but any kind of martial arts. We have a responsibility when we start teaching. It's not only about making a living. It's not only about showing people that you can do it. It's also, yeah, we're teaching something. We're passing something on to the next generation, and it's very important to be a complete person for your students to look at.
Absolutely, and it really shows that that your system really shows balance in life.
Well, I'm glad you can feel it. It's really the idea. Yeah.
Well, Guru Fred, thank you very much for taking time out to interview with us.
Well, thanks.
And it was a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, me too. And I really hope we can meet sometime in the future. Do you have any plan of coming to Singapore? We could.
Wow.
I thought about something. You look very interesting in traditional Filipino weapons. I have one of the biggest Filipino antique weapon dealer in Southeast Asia. He's one of my best friends, and he's here in Singapore.
Really?
I could arrange a meeting. He has like 1,000, more than 1,000 different antique weapons in his gallery. Collectors from the entire world come to him, and I could arrange a meeting, an interview or something, and then we can also continue our work on Filipino martial arts here together for a few days if you guys have an opportunity to stop in Singapore.
That would be great.
That would be a chance in a lifetime to do.
And we just might take you up on that offer, Fred.
Yes, okay. We're going to take you up on that.
Yeah, I'm serious, and I would be very, very happy to arrange something and to continue to talk, and we can go to a nice Filipino restaurant somewhere here and have a lot of fun, but also it can be very, very interesting for Filipino martial artists all over the world to have some more info on antique weapons. And this guy is an encyclopedia. He's an Indonesian guy, but has been in love with the culture of Southeast Asian weapon in general for many years. And he's just the continuity because his father opened the gallery, and both of them, they have so much knowledge. We have people from Canada, from the US, flying to their store for one day just to ask questions. They're amazing.
Oh, wow.
And the father is very old. It's now or never.
Okay, well, not to take up more of your time. Again, this is Romeo, and I just want to say thank you very, very much. And we wish you the best of luck with your school and the rest of your students and your training.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure, and I hope I'll see you guys someday in the future.